Your station for the best Ravens coverage.
Bringing the team to the fans.
It's news from the nest.
We're grateful for our media. We really are, most of the time.
With Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Right now from Window Nation, buy two windows, get two free, and pay nothing until 2027. Offer ending soon. Schedule your free estimate at 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
Talked about this earlier on the show. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Turn it up Tuesday. News from the Nest. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw, George Kittle. Got an extension with the San Francisco 49ers. 4 years, $76.4 mil, which includes $40 million guaranteed. Now the highest paid tight end in football. Just barely edging Trey McBride out in Arizona. And the question we were asking there, how does this affect the Ravens with three pending free agents? Charlie Kohler's not in that level, but Andrews has been that dude, making 12 mil himself. And Isaiah likely looks like a future star himself, even though he has to share catches with number 89.
Yeah, I don't think it'll affect any of those guys right now. I mean, Andrews making, what, 15 mil a year? So Andrews got paid. Is he going to get paid again? I don't see it, Bob. I don't see another team, because I think you mentioned earlier he's averaging, you know, he's got a lot of touchdowns, but he averages 33 yards a game. You know, so that's kind of the issue there, whereas likely is the explosive guy, the yak guy, you know, likely is that guy, the next guy. And with Andrews financially and stuff, I think this is going to be it for him. And they'll have Likely, and they'll have Charlie Kohler, and then maybe they go get, a year from now, they'll draft another one.
Stand corrected, Andrews averaged 39.6 yards per game. But still not an explosive, you know.
Yeah,
Kittle had over 1,000 yards receiving. Andrews had 673. You know, not to make excuses for him, but, you know, slow to come back from the ankle injury suffered late in 2023, which allowed Isaiah Likely to explode onto the scene. Don't forget, when the Ravens got hot late and secured the number one seed in the playoffs, Isaiah Likely was a very, very important part of that.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And Likely's a playmaker. Every time he has had a chance to make plays, he does. And in the big games, he has made plays. So I don't think there's any concern whatsoever about Likely. Can he be a 1,000-yard receiver? Yes. Can he be with the Ravens? I don't know if he can. I just think that Lamar spreads it around too much for that.
Well, let me ask you this. If we're sitting here a year from now, are we talking about a brand-new tight end room?
No. Likely will definitely be there. And I think Charlie Kohler will be too. You know, because I don't think Charlie Kohler is going to be, you know, somebody. Although I didn't think Oliver was going to get 3 years, $21 million either. You know, and the thing is, if Charlie continues to improve his blocking, just show a little more strength, because he's a hell of a positional blocker is what he is right now. I mean, he's 6'7". He's big. But I mean, in college, he didn't block me or you. You know, he was not a blocker. And Likely's a perimeter blocker. He's not an inline blocker. So they could use that a year. And Andrews is not a blocker either.
All right, let's bounce around the draft a little bit. We got profiles coming up throughout the week until we get through all 11. And we have another one coming up here in about 40 minutes or so. But Eric DaCosta talked about the draft class of 2025. And in particular, one of their sixth-round picks, Aeneas Peebles.
Aeneas Peebles is Coach Harbaugh, one of his guys. He loved his tape. We loved his explosion. He's a little undersized, but he's a twitchy, disruptive player who can rush the passer. He plays hard. I think he's got a really, really good skill set for us as a third down sub rusher who runs to the football and can make some plays that way.
Well, that's, you know, Harb's liked him. He's undersized. He definitely is, you know, undersized. So we'll see what he – I mean, you like him on film. You like him – you know, you liked his tape, you know, right now, Virginia Tech. He's 6'1", what was he, 284? So if he's got a little quickness, you know, put him over to center, give him a chance, you know, to beat some people, and we'll see. Work with Chuck Smith, see if that helps you out with your pass rush and stuff. Kind of looking forward to watching the tape on him.
Now, we talked about it earlier with Nolan here, the need for defensive line help.
No doubt.
I don't say this kid can't get the job done, but, you know, he's not the end all. They haven't answered all of those questions, basically, with the draft. There's still going to be more resources coming in at that spot. Because replacing Michael Pierce, easier said than done. Because when he was healthy, he did a lot of beneficial things to
Michael
team.
Pierce was a stud. Plus, he could get some pressure on the quarterback, too. So, Bob, I would think they'll add two. I think they'll add two veteran guys in there.
Now, Teddy Buchanan out of Cal, fourth round pick. Yeah. A couple people mentioned him by name yesterday. So, Eric, what's all the hubbub here?
Buchanan was a guy that I did late in the process. The coaches and scouts liked him. I saw a guy that played very hard, very gifted mover, explosive, excellent coverage linebacker, should translate well to special teams. Think he's a really polished, tough, tenacious guy.
Yes, should translate well to special teams. Yes, he should. You know, and we'll do him tomorrow, Bob, one of the guys we do tomorrow. But he has a hard time against the run, Bob, because he can't get off of blocks and he plays small. And I think, you know, he runs 4.6. He jumps 40 inches on the vertical jump. Yeah, in the pass stuff, sure. Now, if you've got to play him, I think you got to blitz him. Because he'll get engulfed by a lineman, you know, unless it's passing situation. But he does look a little stiff in his hips. But he can run, got a great motor, all those things. Tackles a little high, I think, because of, you know, his hips. But he's a very good blitzer. Very good blitzer. So, just kind of like they did with Simpson when he first started out, you know, just blitz him. Because if people get his hands on him or they shield him, no, he plays small inside is what he does.
Too much to ask that he replaces Trenton Simpson?
Cannot. No. I find that hard time happening there. I think he replaces, you know, board, you know, probably on teams, covering and doing those types of things. I think that's probably it. You know, if he has to start at inside linebacker, whew. I think that would be a tough one just because he's going to have a hard time against the run.
It's been 8-8, 105.7. The Fan News for the Nest. Turn it up Tuesday. Finally, Ravens need a punt returner. Did they answer that one with LaJonte?
Wester is a guy that, you know, what stands out about him is really his returnability. If you watch him, I think he's a twitchy, explosive punt returner. I think, you know, last year it became evident that we could probably get better there at that position. Feel like last year's probably I didn't do a good enough job making sure that we had a good punt returner on the team. We had some guys, but we couldn't get the right mix, the right guy to really do it. And we think Wester has a chance to really come in here and be an impact punt returner for us. So excited about him.
And yeah, I mean, because Tylan Wallace did it. Tylan Wallace won a game returning a kick
a couple
for
years
him.
Ago.
Yeah. So, but he wouldn't catch the ball. He got where he was afraid to go catch it, and then the ball was rolling and stuff. So they said coming in, they were going to look for a punt returner, and we'll see if Wester's that guy. And, you know, if he is, Bob, then all of a sudden, then you're probably keeping six receivers is what you're doing. And then where are you going? Where are you cutting back to have your sixth receiver?
It's been 8-8-105.7 The Fan. When we come back, about we count some money, turn it up Tuesday style, a little buy or sell, talk about many sports subjects of this day. Bottom of the hour, Danielle Allen, Tuck, Baltimore Banner, talk about the Orioles, open the series with a much-needed win against the Yankees. Kyle Gibson makes his return. How many layers to his return could be beneficial to the Bird? Injuries are still a problem here. Another draft profile coming up at 12:45, NFL lunch at 1 o'clock. Going to hear more from Eric DaCosta and others. And your American League East report at 1:15. Only one game in the division, and it happened at Camden Yards. Busy slate tonight. Give you an updated look at the standings as well.
Are you buying?
Great cash, homie.
Or are you selling?
I'm not going to buy into that crap.
Vinny and Haney, 1057 The Fan.
Vinny and Haney, 1057 The Fan. Turn it up Tuesday. Cranking it up to 12. Pick a song. We'll jam to it. A lot of sports going on. Orioles tonight taking on the Yankees. Full slate of AL East fun. We'll get into that with Danielle Allentuck, bottom of the hour. And the next hour, when we get to the American League East report, draft is done. We're not done analyzing it. Schedule's coming out here in a couple of weeks. How many prime timers for the Ravens? I guess they get the max, which is what, five?
Yes.
And if Lamar's healthy, there'll be no flexing unless one of the teams they're scheduled to play in primetime sucks, then they'll bounce that out of there, and all sorts of other things in between.
Well, if you have five, Bob, and towards the end of the year, you can get flexed in for another one, can't you? Or can you
I'm not 100% sure.
I think that's true.
Yeah. So they'll if they who if they are who we think they're going to be, they'll end up getting more.
Right. Because, again, say they're scheduled to play Cleveland in a game, and when the schedule comes out May 14th, because Flacco, maybe he'll be the starting quarterback, and if Cleveland stinks,
yeah,
then that'll get flexed out, but another one could come in depending on the schedule. But we know they're going to be, look, for selfish reasons, 1 o'clock games rule.
I love them.
Yeah. Because then you got a hole. You watch 1-4, the night game, and you're kind of on top of football. You're like, you're seeing pigskins flying all over the place. Those 8:30 games, though, they're like, oh, come on, bro-zip. And it better not be no Christmas. Anyway, I'm digressing in a big, big way. Anyway, lots of sports going on, but let's count some dough by ourselves.
Yes, we are counting money today. The Dow's up 265. The S&P's up 15. NASDAQ is up 20. DraftKings down 3 cents. Under Armour's up 7 cents to 556.
First topic here will be about the Orioles. We know how much the Orioles have struggled against left-handed pitchers, not just this year, the last couple of years. They're going to see another one tonight in Carlos Rodon. However, yes, when they faced him last year, actually had some success chasing him out after 4 innings each time, racking up 8 total runs across those 2 starts, both games at Camden Yards, by the way. Well, so far this year, Carlos Rodon looks more like his usual self than he did last year, but Bob, buy or sell, the O's will overcome their lefty pitcher demons tonight, match their run total from last night, 4 runs off Rodon.
Ugh, off him? I'm going to sell that, but they get into that bullpen, maybe if it's a close game, maybe get in there. Devin Williams, saw that he was in setup duty for them real quick against Rodon. Mateo's 3-for-3 with a homer. He'll be in the lineup tonight. Well, actually, they're kind of short of right-handed bats anyway. So he's going to be in there. Let's see. Adley's 1-for-5. That one was a double. Where are we going here? Gunner's 1-for-4 with a homer. Mountie is 3-for-5 with a homer. Mountie. What about Dylan Carlson? 1-for-5. Just got recalled.
It's a hit.
Yes, there. Yes, it is. So we'll see. But I'm selling what you were trying to get me to buy. But I will buy. They'll put up 4 runs in some capacity tonight. How's that sound?
All right. Over to the NFL. Tyler Sullivan has identified the best, worst, and most interesting draft pick for every AFC team. Looking specifically at the AFC North, the Steelers class. Well, first rounder Derek Harmon, he may be the best. But for Tyler Sullivan, Jack Sawyer in the 4th will be the one to keep an eye on, simply because of Pittsburgh's strong ability to identify and develop pass rush talent. And from a production standpoint, well, Sawyer had everything he could want. Had the sacks at Ohio State, did it while playing against some of the best competition in the Big Ten. Vinny, are you buying or selling that Sawyer may end up being the prize piece of the Steelers' draft class this year?
I'm going to sell it. I think Harmon will be. I think Sawyer's just a try-hard effort dude. You know, kind of like Karloftis was for the Chiefs.
Oh, by the way, Nolan, real quick, getting back to Rodon. Aloriano's 2-for-4, both hits doubles.
That's your guy.
That's right. I told you to watch out for Ramon. Both of them, Arias and Laureano.
I would go back to baseball.
Name my new kid Laureano or Ramon.
One or the other.
Yeah, right.
middle name,
Laureano Ramon. Yes.
The Rockies, though, I mean, they got nothing to celebrate. One of the biggest embarrassments in Major League Baseball, really over the last 6-7 years, and sure, there's been other teams who have bottomed out. The White Sox have been bad, the A's, even the Orioles have been terrible, but this is sustained disappointment in Colorado, and so far this year, 4-24, that's an abysmal pace that could have them on track to finish even lower than the White Sox did last year when they made the wrong kind of history, the worst record in baseball history, 41-121. Now, playing in the NL West, that doesn't help their case either with the Dodgers out there. But buy or sell, Bob, the Rockies will, in fact, finish with no more than 40 wins this year.
Ah, boy. I'll sell it. They got to eke over 40, wouldn't you think? But they've already brought in Clint Hurdle to be the hitting coach. So, Bud Black, I mean, what's the point of firing the manager? You know what I mean? It's just a
well,
team.
He's been there like a decade. Yeah. He hasn't done anything.
No, nah, well, I mean, they've had some success, but they're like the black hole of baseball. The Colorado Rockies, they'll get over 40 wins, but still doesn't guarantee you the number one pick in the draft anymore because of that stupid lottery.
Were they expected to be that bad?
I don't think anybody expects it to be historically bad, yeah. But they were, them and the White Sox, the two worst teams coming out of the... Does hockey have about ping pong balls?
Yep.
NFL does not. Yeah, why do you think people watch the NFL draft? No stinking ping pong balls.
Yeah.
Ping pong balls at it. They should be for ping pong only.
Yeah, but don't give them any ideas because the draft lottery would be another thing to televise.
Oh, God. Oh, Bob, one thing that it sounds like they are going to change with the draft, 10 minutes to 7.
Well, I'm cool
like
with that.
First yeah. round. Yeah, I mean, Goodell was like, this is ridiculous because, you know, he's like...
I'm getting booed every pick. It's taking 10 minutes.
Well, the average pick is like 7 minutes or something, you know. And then he's talking about, you know, if you want an extension on one of your picks, 2 minutes, you can have a 2-minute extension on one of your picks.
And let's be honest. They've been doing the intel for months.
Bob,
all of a sudden you get there and you're like drooling like an imbecile.
When I first started, remember that? 15! For the first round.
Yeah, well, the draft was in one day. Used to be on the Saturday, started at 12, then they flipped it to 2 rounds Saturday.
It was Saturday, Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, but then it was during the day. Saturday. Oh, yeah. I remember, I'm old enough to when the draft was on like a Tuesday. Tuesday!
Bob, when I lived in California, when I was with the Niners, Sunday, we started 7 a.m. It was awesome. We're out of there by noon.
Yeah, if you want to cut down on time, enough with Goodell riding out on a bicycle and all this stuff with the charities and all these puff piece stories.
Right, you don't want to eliminate that sort of thing. The feel
well,
good.
No. Well, that doesn't take away from the 10 minutes. I mean, we were out, you know, like 11:20. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was.
Well, it's all part of it.
But if you knock it down, even if it's over by 11, I mean, 8 to 11 is all they need. I mean, that's primetime TV anyhow.
All right, don't want to get too far off on this one. But look, when Goodell goes out, insert city here, you know, Tennessee knew they were taking Cam Ward. Just take this with you.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome to the 2025 draft. Boo, boo. Tennessee takes Cam Ward. There we go. Let's move on. Next.
Yeah. Well, when they say it starts at 8, that should be on the clock.
Yeah,
not well, all the other festivities.
I think Rogers said one team in the whole first round took their whole time.
Hmm. All right. One last topic for today.
Yes.
A lot of chatter about Shador Sanders, his slide down to the 5th round. Mixed opinions were there ahead of the draft, and now people even more adamant in what other side they're on. Is he a franchise guy? Is he just a career backup? Well, go ahead and consider former Steelers player Merrill Hodge among the naysayers. A quote here from him said, in the college environment, it can be hard to translate a kid to where he's going to play. You have to find things that simulate the NFL. You're not going to throw 50% screens and survive in the NFL. They'll say their offensive line was bad, and that's why they did those types of things. But if your quarterback is good, you can run everything. Vinny, are you buying or selling what Hodge has to say there?
I'll sell it. You know, ask Caleb Williams, ask the Giants. You know, I mean, O-lines that are bad in the NFL, their quarterbacks get the crap beat out of them. Ask Patrick Mahomes, you know, when they played some of those
the
good...
The two Super Bowls
yeah,
they lost.
Yeah.
And David Carr never recovered from the,
yeah.
the beating he took.
Yeah, ask Daniel Jones.
It's 58-81 up 5-7 the Fan when we come back. Hopefully the Orioles got another win in them, or 80-plus as they get ready for the Yankees tonight. Danielle Allen, Tuck, Baltimore Banner, preview the game, talk about the injuries and the return of Kyle Gibson. Draft profile number 2, 1245. Going to a smaller school, but a bigger man? Covers the Orioles in Major League Baseball. She's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome back Danielle Allen, Tuck. Danielle, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us again here on The Fan.
Of course, good afternoon.
Right, now, we were talking earlier, clean games have not been a regular occurrence for the Orioles this year. And, you know, even Arias had the throwing error led to an unearned run. But when we talk about the best games that they've played, and there's only been 11 wins here, I guess this is one of them?
I guess you could say that. There's not many to choose from right now. Right. You know, they still left a lot of runners in scoring position. The bullpen still had a little bit of a meltdown, but you know, you had a good start, and I think that was the key yesterday, was Sugano giving him that scoreless start and, you know, putting them in a position to be able to win. That's just not what you've been getting from their pitchers this year.
And you mentioned Tomo Sugano, and he's had what I call yesterday a quality start. I know it wasn't six innings, blah, 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 whatever the old baseball rule book would say, but five innings, no runs, you win, qualify for said victory. We'll take it on top of a couple of seven-inning performances. Your assessment of him, Danielle, so far, coming over from Japan, had hand cramps in the opener, controlled environment in Toronto, but for the most part has seemed to adapt well to the American League East. Are we looking at a guy that, if he stays healthy, is going to be very reliable for Brandon Hyde throughout the course of this campaign?
I think what you're getting with Sugano is, you know, obviously he's a rookie, but he's 35 years old. He has a ton of experience in games, a really long career over in Japan. So I think with him is what we've seen is, you know, he may make a mistake here or there, but he does not unravel. You know, he's able to recover. And what I really liked about him last night is that strikeout aspect was there. And we kept hearing about that, you know, in Japan, of how much of a strikeout threat he was over there. And we saw that finally last night. And I think he's only going to get stronger from there. He's really settled in now. You see it in the clubhouse. You see it the way he interacts with Adley and the rest of his teammates. And you just see him becoming more comfortable and more confident with each start. And yeah, you know, the length may not be there. He still may get himself in some trouble. But, you know, if you can get five-ish solid innings out of him, I think that's a great ask of somebody who's never played in Major League Baseball before.
Now, Danielle, as you know, Kyle Gibson makes the start tonight, who won 15 games for the Orioles 2 years ago when they won the American League East. And Brandon Hyde said before the game, when he said adults coming into the clubhouse, you know, he was well-respected by the younger pitchers especially. What does he bring, hopefully, from a performance standpoint, quality, but also getting him back in a clubhouse that might be somewhat beleaguered right now?
Yeah, I think you know who Kyle Gibson is as a pitcher. I think you know he can maybe get you five, six innings every time, maybe give up three, four runs, possibly more, but he's going to get you deep in the game. He's probably going to make every start. It's just, you know, the type of pitcher he is at this point in his career. But I asked Hyde this directly yesterday. I said, did bringing him in, you know, the impact he had on this 2023 team and how highly his teammates still speak of him from that one season in Baltimore, did that play any part in wanting to bring him back? And Hyde said, absolutely. You know, the guys in that clubhouse learned so much from him, not only about pitching, but how to be major leaguers, how to handle, you know, the day-to-day stuff, you know, and about fun. Kyle Gibson played a big part in their celebrations that year that they're still doing today, that they brought back last night. So I think Kyle Gibson's impact, you know, he'll get you on the field. You know, he's going to eat up innings for you, but he's also going to make a major impact in this clubhouse and on this next generation of players.
Danielle Allen, Tuck, Baltimore Banner, talking Orioles here on 105.7. The Fan. Birds going for two in a row against the Yankees tonight, 6:35. Kyle Gibson on the hill against Carlos Rodon. You talk about fun. And Watson, the Orioles, Danielle with runners in scoring position. Not fun. Last night, second and third, nobody out. Couldn't get it home. O'Hearn thankfully hits the three-run bomb, and they hold on to get the W. Gunnar Henderson doesn't look like he's having the greatest of times so far in 2025. But these runner in scoring position woes, not only this year, go back to the second half of last season, new hitting coaches. So how do they get out of this funk that's been lasting for more than just a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think part of the problem, and you have guys, you know, Gunnar specifically, he's always trying to be that hero. He's always trying to hit it out of the park. He's always trying to drive in every run. When you're in a lot of these cases, you know, just getting on base is enough. You know, if you can just keep the inning going, keep the line moving, you know, you don't have to be the one to get the big hit every time. Just don't strike out. You know, you, if you can just get on base, that can be a big difference. And I think you just see Gunnar getting frustrated that he's not being that hero. And I think the mental game is a big part of it. But I also think it's, you know, maybe guys standing up and telling him, like, you don't need to do that. You know, you can chill out. So I think there's a lot of parts of it. I think there's definitely, like, the mechanical side of it. I think that this team has been beat up for a year. But I think it's really time to get out of this mindset of these guys are young and don't know how to, like, live up to the moment and realize that they're fourth-year players at this point, Gunnar and Adley, and it's time to know what to do in these situations.
Hey, Danielle, what do you think's going on with Mountcastle? I mean, he's batting 198, struck out three times last night, got one homer.
I don't know if there's anything specifically going on with him. He's just in a funk, and it kind of extends back to last season for him as well. I think he's a guy that kind of goes as the team goes. You know, if the team's in a funk, he's in a funk. But it's a little concerning for him specifically because he, you know, they expect him to be their slugging first baseman, and they're just not getting that out of him.
Danielle Allentuck, Orioles-Yankees, game two of this three-game series coming up tonight at 6:35. Danielle, appreciate the injuries. Gary Sanchez goes down. Westberg, does the Westberg injury go back to Toronto? Because I know Brandon Hyde's mentioned a few times that he's been banged up going back to that opening series at Rogers Center.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys who have been banged up right now. Hyde said Jordan Westberg, you know, could barely walk in the clubhouse one day. I'm not quite sure why it took so long for him to go on the IL, if that was the case. But that is a CBS to see worth of injuries right now that they have.
Danielle Allentuck, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the rest of this homestand, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
There's Danielle Allentuck from the Baltimore Banner. By the way, Gunnar, runners in scoring position for the season, .143.
Oof.
.143, that barely makes the weight limit for junior welterweight. As a matter of fact, he's over the weight limit at 143. We'll come back. Draft profile number two, staying offensive line. NFL lunch coming up at 1 o'clock. Hey, May 1st is the deadline to pick up options for the 2022 draft class. Speaking of the draft, whose options were picked up, whose were declined? American League East reporter 115 and Vic Carucci, NFL Network Radio, talks about the draft. The Bills, I guess old Brandon Bean didn't like people criticizing what he was doing there.
Vinny Serrato's Draft Profiles. News, notes, and analysis on the 2025 NFL Draft Class. Vinny and Haney. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
Carson Vinson, a small school guy, tremendous size and strength. I can tell you, he came into my office last week. He visited last week and almost broke my hand. But he's just a big, strong, physical, athletic player. I think Coach Wohop's excited to work with him.
Ravens GM Eric DaCosta talking about one of the 11 Ravens draft picks this past weekend. 2025 style. And let's go, as you heard, small school Alabama A&M and their fifth-round pick.
Yeah, Carson Vinson, 6.07.1. So 6.7 and an eighth. 314 pounds, ran 5.12, jersey 76. 34.5-inch arms. He's got arms on top of arms. 10.25 hands. So he's got long arms, big hands, 28.5 vertical, 9'3" broad jump. Now, 2020, played in three games in the spring, COVID. 2021, started 10 games at left tackle. 22, started 11 games at left tackle. 23, started 11 games at left tackle. And 2024, first team all SWAC, started 12 games at left tackle. And then he was Senior Bowl invite and started at left tackle in the Senior Bowl too. Strength, size, arm length. He's got a quick pass set. Got better each day at the Senior Bowl practices. Shows some nasty. He's a good athlete. Good quicks off the line of scrimmage. He can bend his knees and he gives good effort. Weaknesses, he's got no punch and pass. He'll lunge and reach and pass. He's raw. Will get driven and pass. Struggled versus power rushers. Will need to get stronger and need more punch and explosion in the run game. Quick pass set. Will lunge and miss in pass. Really struggled in pass in the Senior Bowl game. Struggled with redirect in pass. In summary, I said, Carson, he's got height, arm length. He's extremely raw in the pass game. Really struggled in the Senior Bowl and pass pro. This is a project with developmental traits. This is one that, you know, your O-line, and they traded up for him too, Bob, in the fifth. So this is one that your O-line coach said, you know, maybe went and worked him out. Their guys liked him at the Senior Bowl, seeing him get better every day in practice. But then in the Senior Bowl game, he was not good. So it's a guy that they want to work with. I don't think he can help this year, Bob, at all. I think he's going to be learning. And, you know, a year from now, we'll see. As long as he, as long as we see that he's getting better. Like, Bob, I can't wait till I see him on Sunday. You know, because he's going to be a monster of a guy. I want to, you know, see where he's at. And then for them, you know, and we won't see him Monday and Tuesday. But if Warhop sees improvement, and then when we go out to OTAs, he's better than he was at the rookie minicamp, you know. And then when we see the mandatory minicamp, he's better then. Then when he comes back for training camp, he's a little better then. I mean, those are the kind of things that we got to follow with him. But he is raw can be, Bob.
More upside than, say, Saleh was a couple of years ago, who was running with the ones for a brief moment there.
I'm guessing that he's got football intelligence. He's smart, you know. And Saleh supposedly struggled mentally. And if you're struggling mentally, Bob, you're always gonna struggle. So, you know, I'm guessing that intelligence-wise, he's probably got that. And if he's got that, then he can be better than Saleh. Because Saleh made it what, Bob? Year? 2 years?
I don't think he made 2 years.
Yeah.
He got cut last year at training camp.
Yeah.
And he went from running at left guard with the starters to just running out of town altogether.
So 6'7", 314, and he probably end up even getting better. But he's got good feet and athletic ability. That's the key, and that gives you something to work with and develop.
As we talked about earlier, their NFL schedule comes out May 14th. And the Ravens' opponents, just to give you an idea, we're guessing the max games allowed primetime. Division foes, both home and away, Cincy, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. They host New England. No.
No.
Host the Jets.
No.
Negative. Host Houston, possibly.
Maybe.
I mean, they've met, what, 2 years running in some pretty significant games there. The Bears, home game.
If it's later in the year and the Bears are winning, possibly. Well, I don't think off the get-go. Yeah. I don't think off the get-go.
What about the Detroit Lions, who the Ravens destroyed here 2 years ago?
I think that's got a definite possibility.
And then the Rams. One of the great games ever played at M&T Bank Stadium was against the Rams. The Tylan Wallace walk-off punt return. Away, well, division rivals. I guess Pittsburgh's got to be in there somewhere. Primetime?
Cincy will be.
Cincy? Because they played those two epic games last year. Mm-hmm. One in primetime.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see here. At Buffalo? Yeah.
Yes.
At KC?
Yes.
Probably. At Miami?
No.
At the Packers?
Very good possibility.
At Minnesota?
Possibly.
So that's it. So I'm trying to think where the holiday angle will come in here.
Not Thanksgiving.
Christmas will be on a Thursday. Ravens have played 2 years in a row on the road on Christmas. Now, if they were playing in Detroit, they could have a little Thanksgiving love to it, but they're not. Unless they do a Thanksgiving primetime game.
Night game.
Ugh. It would have to be at home.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm not crazy about that one.
Yeah, we're trying to speculate, and that's all we're doing, as to how many primetime games the Ravens are going to get, and in particular, how many holiday primetime games they're going to get. Ravens, Nolan, real quick, do you frown upon Christmas? I like watching games on Christmas, but, you know,
We don't need three, I can tell you that.
Because last year's was four. Weren't they the middle game last year?
I think it was just three.
Three.
But Yeah, I mean, plus you're doing.
What I'm saying, weren't they the 4 o'clock game?
I thought you meant four games.
Yes,
sorry.
That's what I thought.
But yeah, look, you don't one game at night, make it premiere, and that's fine. But all day extravaganza like Thanksgiving, it's unnecessary.
Well, they did say, Bob, they are switching the Detroit start time from 12:30 to 1. So it'll be like typical 1, 4, 8:30.
I don't think I like that. I like the regular times going on forever. What difference does it make?
I don't know.
Well, I think the excuse or the reasoning was that is what time the teams always play.
Get the bleep out of here.
Yeah.
They don't always play on Thursdays. But I guess you got to man up a little bit here. I don't know. I think they come up with nonsense just to change things around. That's a change just for the sake of changing.
Yeah.
That doesn't impact anything at all. But that's just me. I mean, we're off anyway, so we'll be sitting around watching on television.
Yeah, I don't know.
What's that? Again, what's the extra half hour mean? Yeah. What difference is it?
Yeah, because we always eat halftime of the second game.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. When we come back, speaking of eating NFL lunch, going to shove that football down your throat just a little bit more. American League East report, standings update, tonight's schedule, Orioles win. We'll revisit some of those highlights. How about Cedric Mullins robbing a two-run homer from Goldschmidt? And then Vic Carucci, NFL Network Radio, talk about what Buffalo did. Buffalo's like the Ravens. They can't exercise those Kansas City playoff demons. How close are they to getting that one done this year?